This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Danny in Arlington on the Red Sox. Hi, Danny.
Hey, Mike. First, real quick, I love the boxing talk. I want to talk about Pora and what you're going to do when Nunez gets back. Do you think any chance Nunez DHs and they put Martinez out in left field and give Benintendi a break? He did nothing after the All-Star break last year and looked lost last night.
God, no. Did Benintendi look lost last night?
No, I mean, I didn't see all of his at-bats. Again, we were on the air yesterday.
How did J.D. Martinez look?
J.D. Martinez didn't look good either. To me, the guy that I'd have no problem sitting down is Bradley. Like, that's the one I don't get. And Bradley was up in a couple of spots yesterday. One's in the ninth inning. Okay, as a guy on second, two outs, he made the last out of the game. But earlier, they had a chance to pad the lead. Man on third, one out. Infield pop-up, didn't get the guy home. Like, Bradley, to me, hurt him again yesterday. So, nobody put emphasis on it because they're up 4-0 going into the eighth against a dog team. You think it's over. But a lot of those same mistakes were there yesterday. I mean, in a lot of ways, Murray's not wrong. It felt like an extension of 2017.
Tony and Stoneham on the Sox. Hi, Tony.
How you doing, guys? I got to tell you something. I hope this is not a sign of what's to come. And, Maz, I put a little blame on you because you've been preaching not too long ago, and you went through in April how many games that Sale pitched into the eighth inning and everything. To take him out in the sixth inning is a friggin' disgrace yesterday. You pitch him in the seventh, you take Barnes in the eighth, and you get your closer in the ninth. And this guy, I don't know what the heck he is thinking, but to leave those guys in, Kelly in, after the way he was throwing the ball all over the place, it's just ridiculous.
Okay, two things. Sale not going more than six innings, and I have a thought for Cora on the bullpen usage, but first on Sale, this is what they have to do, right?
Okay, it was 92 pitches. I'm glad they pulled him when they did. Everyone knew it was coming. But this is sort of does put more pressure on Cora in the bullpen. That's one more inning now that's got to come from someone else. And so it ended up being Kelly yesterday, although maybe they would have skipped Barnes because Kelly got the eighth. So they might have gone to Kelly there anyway. Ultimately, it puts more pressure on those guys, and if they don't have an eighth inning guy, it's going to be an issue.
So this is, again, something Cora's going to have to realize. This is not the World Baseball Classic. This is not the Winter League. This is not being the bench coach where this doesn't come back to you. People track this stuff, and I don't know if he's ready for this in terms of the scrutiny of his moves. But Lou mentioned this on TV, and it's a last night with me, and this is a good point. Leaving in Kelly one batter too long, right?
Yep, it was.
It was sort of clear that Kelly did not have his stuff, and he was walking guys and yanking the ball left, right, and center. So he gets to the point where I think it's second and third, okay? And he's got the right-hander Gomez up, and at that point, after it's clear that Kelly doesn't have it.
Smith is a right-on-right guy. Should have gone to Smith there.
You bring in Smith for Gomez because the next three batters are Gomez, who hits from the right, Miller, who hits from the left, Ramos, who hits from the right. So if you had brought in Smith, who's really your eighth-inning guy, right? Like, that's supposed to be the guy. You put him in a better position to succeed because two of the three guys are right-handed hitters.
He stuck with Kelly too long, no question about it.
Instead, he stuck with Kelly one extra batter. Kelly walked Gomez. Now the bases are loaded, and Carson Smith has to come in and face two lefties. The first batter again is Miller. The next one's Ramos, who's a righty, and then comes Spahn, who's a lefty. So if you're putting Carson Smith in the best position to succeed, and you're aware of what Joe Kelly looks like, you yank out Kelly, and you bring in Miller and let him start with the right-hander and get two of the three at-bats against the right-hander.
Yeah, big mistake there.
And so look, like, again, not that I'm going to notice that, but someone's going to notice it, and it's going to get picked apart, and he's going to be asked about it. And this is, Cora better be ready for this because this is coming.
Yeah, to me, and the part of the problem is they don't have an eighth inning guy because I don't love any of them really. When you get right down to it, I don't love Smith. I mean, we don't know yet. He had a great year in Seattle, 3 years ago, whenever it was before he got here, and then he got hurt. So we'll see what that looks like. But he is a guy that throws everything, I mean, he's got a hard sinker and a slider, but he's a right-handed batter guy. His kind of stuff reeks to that. So I just felt like that whole sequence in there got botched.
Rocco and Saugus with the Patriots thought. Hi, Rocco.
Hey, Mike, I want to talk about Butler, but I also want to talk about the Boston. First on Butler, listen, I was listening to the radio earlier about he was a focus. But, Belichick, honestly, wasn't he, not focused either. Like, wasn't he like in a Milwaukee Bucks game like 2 or 3 days before the Super Bowl?
And then, good one, he was.
Like a, and then he do like a 30-for-30 like the week of the Super Bowl. And you were bashing Brady when he pulled the, when he did his 15-minute thing on Facebook. And you're like, oh, the time is off. The time is off.
I didn't love Bill at that basketball game. I didn't love that.
So for me, I feel like it's like, okay, like I'm not focused. You always preach about being focused. I'm like, well, if that was a player, what would he do? Didn't he like release a player before the Super Bowl, like in 2011, Underwood?
Yes, he did.
So it's just like you can't do nothing wrong. You know, Belichick can't do nothing wrong. So I don't blame players that they want to get out. You know what I mean?
Okay, so what's your second point, Rocco?
Huh? Okay, the Bucks.
That's it. I'm going to let you go. You gave us enough. Yeah, I think Bill has faced his share of second gear. Don't act, Rocco, like Bill's gotten let off the hook or anything here. I think he's gotten a lot of pushback from the fans without much prompting. It's not like it's the talk radio crowd that's incensing that. No, the fans were there. They did not need any prompting to second-guess Bill Belichick for how he managed Butler in the Super Bowl.
I can't ever remember him getting hit this hard in 18 years after a decision.
Do you have any thoughts on the Butler stuff that was released today? There was like an inside video, and we have the sound. We'll play it for you. I don't think there's anything there that really moves the story much to me.
There's still no real answer.
There's no answer. It was, you know, Butler was followed around by Sports Illustrated during his free agency process, sort of like these Players Tribune videos or whatever, behind the scenes kind of thing. And there's sound, we'll play it for you. But I didn't really learn anything from it. I learned more from Mike Giardi's follow-up tweets on NBC Sports Boston. Mike Giardi, after this came out today, tweeted, quote, texted a couple of current Patriots about the Malcolm Butler media tour and his comments to Sports Illustrated. One, meaning one former Patriot, said, I'm sorry, current Patriot. One current Patriot said, quote, we all wish it would have worked out better, but he should have been more focused on what mattered those 2 weeks. Another one said, quote, we didn't like the decision, but it wasn't without merit. Another tweet, also both said it's over and done with. Nothing getting said now changes a damn thing. Finally on Butler, he tried, in quotes, to return to form, said one teammate. And we appreciated that, but was he ever himself? Last year, said the player, no. Okay, so I glean more out of that than I glean out of the Butler stuff, but your thoughts?
Well, with regard to the tweet, I come back to McCourty. It feels like McCourty's in Belichick's camp in this, and I'm guessing. I don't know, but I'm going back to McCourty's the one that made the comment initially. We knew all week that Malcolm wasn't going to play. It feels like to me McCourty's, if anyone from the locker room is doing any sort of damage control on the part of the Patriots, it's McCourty. That's what it feels like to me. So, and honestly, I'm not sure I entirely believe it. And even if there was an issue leading into the game, it still didn't preclude Bill from looking at what was going on the field in the second half of the game and saying, I can't leave Jordan Richards out there. We got to try. We're getting smoked by Nick Foles. So whether he had a good week of practice or not, let's give it a crack and see what happens.
I'm telling you, it just goes back to the first thing that I said. When you have him in uniform, that's if you had just sent him home, you know how much easier it is on you, Bill? Because whatever this is...
Yeah, no one's going to be searching for an explanation if you just sent him home.
Then what you're saying is that, you know, the player says it wasn't without merit. And, you know, he should have been focused on what mattered most those 2 weeks. Was he ever himself last year? No. Okay, so he wasn't himself. He was focused on other things. He was out to lunch. Send him home. If he's not engaged, then don't give him a uniform. Fine. It just makes sense. But when you put him in uniform there and put him on the punt team, then you're left with this in-between thing. Like, what? I'm telling you, Bill would have made it much easier on himself. And I think we'd all feel not great about it, but maybe a little better if it's just don't put him in uniform.
Yeah, I still think it's a bigger problem that Jordan Richards was himself. That's the problem. I'd rather have Malcolm Butler in someone else's body than Jordan Richards in his own. To me, there's still no excuse for Belichick on it. And there was one comment that Butler played when we get to him that I did like because I thought it gave you some insight as to what he was feeling on the sideline.
So we'll get to that in a second. Bob and Easton, go ahead. We only got a minute.
Listen, you know, Felga, you'll admit that I'm the biggest Patriot rum swab, Patriot, you know, fan, you know, footy pajama, right?
You are up there, man, yes.
I'm number one. So I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to, you inspired me with your, you know, the Bruins are done in October. So I'm going to give you something here. I'm going to stretch my neck out like you did back in October.
Okay.
You know, and you took a lot. I'm going to tell you something. This is a hot take, and this is going to be a theme. Rob Gronkowski is going to get traded, and I'm going to tell you right now, this is a guarantee. Guaranteed, bought from Easton. Jimmy Superfly Stewart, you record this. Because this is, you're going to be like, damn, bought from me. When I'm walking down Route 1 collecting bottles of cans in my carriage, my ears to the grindstone. There are businesses that Rob Gronkowski, you know, deals with. He's gone, guys, and he's going to the West Coast. I'm not going to say teams. I'm not going to predict. I'm not going to go that far.
So hold on.
He's gone, guys.
You've actually heard this, is what you're saying.
Yes, I listen. I'm not going to sit there and say, hey, I'm telling you right now, he's not retiring. He's not going to the WWE. Remember Richard Seymour got traded and Lawyer Malloy? This will be the next big shoe on Bill Belichick. And listen, guys, I am the biggest patriot. Like, I chastise you guys on this stuff. But when I heard this, he's gone, guys. And you know what? Greg Bedard's probably listening, and he'll probably report something now.
Well, no, well,
I'm
Greg,
you,
okay, Bob,
huge.
Thanks for the tip. Coming from you, I take it seriously. Hopefully you're not really collecting cans on the side of Route 1. But, you know, I don't believe it. I think it'd be stupid. You can't trade a guy like that. And I don't think Robert Kraft would allow it. I mean, that's just my feeling. But Bedard, who knows a hell of a lot more than I do, you know, keeps hearing that, you know, he keeps asking about trades. He keeps asking about, are they going to draft a tight end? All this stuff. Bedard has never been in this camp that says, oh, yeah, this is just a ploy. Gronk's coming back. Bedard has never felt that for one second.
If they trade Gronk, Brady is going to be pissed. Oh, is he going to be pissed? He'll quit.
It better be a good return, man. If you trade Garoppolo for peanuts and then you trade Gronkowski for anything less than a first-round pick, I am sorry.
So you're going to take away Amendola, you're going to take away Gronk, and you're going to give him Edelman off a knee surgery?
Because you don't want to pay him a couple extra $1 million? Like, ooh. Would you come on? Don't tell me that. We're not going to get someone in trouble for something they haven't done yet. I don't think they're going to do it. I don't believe they're going to do it. We continue on Agenda Free Friday right after these words.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stanton, the National League MVP last year, swung on and drilled to deep right center field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It is first Yankee at bat. Giancarlo. Non si può stopparlo. It is a Stantonian home run, a two-run blast to right center in his first Yankee at bat, and the Yankees take a 2-0 lead.
I didn't know it was that easy.
Swung on and into the air to deep center. Oh, that ball is high, it is far, it is gone. His second home run of the game, Giancarlo, non si può fermarlo. It's a Stantonian home run to dead center, a solo shot. And the Yankees take a 6-1 lead.
When that first one went out, Maz is pretty much take committed to the Yankees and Giancarlo Stanton. So when Stanton, on his first official swing as a New York Yankee, went oppo for a two-run home run in Toronto, Maz reacted strongly.
It was selfish of me, I admit it.
What happened on the second one? What did you do on the second one?
Well, so I only saw it pop up on my phone because I was driving in the car, but when I saw the video of it, oh my God, did you see that home run? That thing, they had to give that thing a passport because it was at customs by the time the Yankees got back to their hotel, for crying out loud. It was an absolute, I said the first one was a rocket. The second one was that Chinese space station. Oh my God, it almost hit the restaurant back there. The center fielder didn't even move, which should tell you plenty. To hit one so far that usually it's a left fielder or the right fielder that doesn't move because you hit one down the line, you can hit it farther. This guy in center did not move. It was an absolute smash of a home run. Two homers. What do you have? Two homers, four RBI, and a double? But, you know, the Red Sox don't need that. They don't need that. I mean, what would you want that for? I mean,
they're getting someone just as good with a better contract.
Yeah, I mean, the productivity, the sizzle. Who wants that? I mean, you know, just win the game.
Yeah, look at the numbers over the last couple of years. Same guy.
I mean, you know, if they win that game 4-0 yesterday, yeah, no big deal. Fine. All good. No problem. Wildly entertaining. It was 2.5 hours up until Joe Kelly got in the game. It was Stanton. I had more fun yesterday watching Stanton for 30 seconds of highlights than I did for the Red Sox for 3 hours.
Chris in California, your thoughts?
Hey, Felger, how you doing?
Good, what do you got?
I need my 15-second rant about the Joe Kelly meltdown and Corey Zanette management, but first, I got something for you, boy Mavs. Win, dance, repeat, baby! I was the nanny on the timely call yesterday when Giancarlo hit the laser, so please insert foot and mouth on this one. And by the way, Felger, he's costing you street cred with those moves. Please strap him down the studio next time. I'm not sure if he's doing the Yankee terrible towel shuffle there. So, hey, I'm on board here. I'm moving over to the dark side with you guys. It was Cord that blew this one-header of a gem for sale. I mean, I know it's hot down at the drop, but Joe Kelly looked like he had the meat sweats on the mound. I mean, how can you throw that hard and suck that much? But my point is, Cora just watched like a lost puppy. Forget mismanagement. How about no management? Three freaking walks with no change? What, did the sixth mound restriction rule come into play here? And you can't tell me this loss was on Carson Smith either. He was a patsy. Why didn't Cora call for Smith or Cambrell during the Gomez at-bat? That eighth inning was the game. Forget the ninth.
Yeah, the Gomez at-bat.
It was a big one, no question. Yeah, no question about it. And you know, he stuck with Kelly too long. And I think this is one of those things where, like, you know, and it's not Cora's fault, this part of it. He doesn't have any history with these guys. We do. So you see Joe Kelly come in, and as the caller said, meat sweats. Like, here you go. Here's Kelly, pin the tail on the donkey again. Guy throws 100 miles an hour, and he has less than a strikeout an inning. Explain that one. Right? You can't, because you know Joe Kelly. And I would even say that with Matt Barnes. Barnes pitched well yesterday, but he's a seventh inning guy at best. I feel that way about Smith. I feel that way about Kelly. Max, those guys you can't use after the seventh inning because they're not reliable enough to throw strikes under pressure.
Agenda Free Friday continues. Charlie in Fall River has a thought on Tuukka Rask last night. What did you think of the goalie?
Michael, well, I hope you can hear me. I got a bad connection here. But before I get to Rask, can I just ask you a programming question?
Please.
When, you know, with all the ownership changes, are the days of the Felger Amonte post game, are those days over? Or are we going to get that?
They're coming back, Charlie. Felger and Amonte will be doing post game on NBC Sports Boston in the playoffs. So that is coming.
Thank God, because the post game coverage for this team is dreadful in this town. It is absolutely dreadful. Now with Rask, I felt the same way you did when he went nuts. I said, finally, a pulse. The guy's got a heartbeat. And then, you know, when Vasilevskiy came down the eighth, did you see the graphic they put up with the height and weight of the two goalies? They're both 6'3", but Vasilevskiy's got him by 60 pounds.
That would have been tremendous, even though they don't know how to fight. But, Charlie, don't you think Rask has needed a moment like that?
Absolutely.
And thank you for the call, Charlie. We've all been waiting for it. We've all been waiting. You know, where's the pulse? Where's the compete? Where's the scrap? You know, you just can't get in your butterfly and play the angle, and like, it's going to take a little bit more than that. And we've all just sort of been waiting for that moment. A lot of people thought it would never come because Tuukka is just sort of a straight line. And when that happened, like, didn't you just, like, there it is. There it is. And hopefully that's not just a flash, and hopefully that's some sort of trigger or moment for him that, you know, will bring out more of him. They need more out of him.
Oh, I bet you Cassidy loved it. I bet you Cassidy loved it.
How could you not?
I mean, it tells you, you know, how can you not believe, when you see it like that, how can you not believe that the guy's invested, right? That was the kind of stuff that Thomas used to do at his height.
Of course.
You know, Thomas would be whacking people with his stick, going bananas in there, because, you know, he was a caged animal, for crying out loud.
So speaking of the broadcast, and not to pile on, I've done some Nesson bashing. I swore this is not to pile on, but just another, because Jack has gotten so, you know, obsessed with the officiating and everything. Did he mention last night that Rask should have been thrown out of the game? Did anyone mention that on the broadcast? Did anyone catch that? Because I know Jack's big on the rules and, you know, being called fairly. If the goalie punches with the blocker, it's supposed to be a match penalty. And I did not know this. DJ Bean said it on NBC Sports Boston, and then he actually sent me the rule. Rule 51, roughing, 51.3, match penalty. If, in the judgment of the referee, a goalkeeper uses his blocking glove to punch an opponent in the head or face in an attempt to deliberately injure an opponent, a match penalty must be assessed. Would you see Rask was punching his waffle pad out there with intent?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Now, that said,
I guess there is some room for judgment there, but...
But I would tell you, I'm glad they didn't.
Of course!
Right, and not just because he's a Bruin, but for the same reason. Like, to me, I don't want to see a guy get tossed for that. Like, you know, all right, fine, there was a scrape. Big deal, it's part of the game. Like, suck it up. So I'm glad he didn't. Don't you wish, like... I mean, if he did it more frequently, I guess it wouldn't mean what it meant last night. But just show me that you're into it, man. That's all. Show me that you're into it.
We all needed to see it. Pete in Delaware on that heavyweight fight this weekend. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. Hey, I saw that Wilder interview, and Alfred was just reading some articles. You know, even if Joshua wins, Joshua's promoter, Eddie Hearn, does not want Wilder fighting him. they've even come, he's even come out and said he wants him to fight another Brit named Dylan White before he steps right in the ring with Joshua. So I don't get it. This is what drives me nuts about the heavyweights. You have two guys ready to go at each other in their prime, and boxing is like holding off to do it. And I'm afraid we're going to get like another Pacquiao Mayweather when they're not, you know, when Wilder's not in his prime. He's already 32. This is the stuff that drives me nuts about boxing. Let the two best guys get in the damn ring and fight.
So if they're just priming the pump, okay. But they better be careful. If one of these guys gets knocked off, it loses the allure. Because then it's the other guy that may have to fight, or they have to go back and atone. Like, you know, one's 40-0, one's 23-0, or whatever it is. And they're fighting good fighters. Like this guy that Josh was fighting this weekend's undefeated.
Right, and the guy that Wilder fought the last time is undefeated.
No tomato cans.
Or he lost once, whatever it was.
So if one of these guys gets knocked off, it loses the whole thing. Yeah, undefeated Brit and undefeated American, they're ready to go. Would you let them go already?
Yeah, so the one question I have is like, if once they fight, one of them loses, right? And I know you can do a rematch, but then doesn't it sort of, like, are you better off stringing it out?
Well, so that's what I'm saying. Priming the pump, string it out, fine. But if someone loses in the interim, you've sort of lost it.
I mean, if I were them, I wouldn't dance around. I'm just asking philosophically about, you know, whether you're better off milking it or not. And I after the last fight with Wilder, I exchanged messages with Chris Mannix, and I said, these guys got to fight soon, don't they? Like, what's the deal? And he said they should fight by the end of the year, but knowing boxing, they'll screw it up and they'll end up putting it off for another year or year and a half. And it's hard to not have that fear because you want to see these guys go now. Now. You know, Wilder's not young. He's new, but he's not young.
I think the caller just said 32, right?
Yeah, I mean, so you got to get these guys going.
Felger and Naz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Naz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Naz, there was one cut that stood out to you.
Yeah, so again, we heard a little bit from Butler in the immediate aftermath of the game. I think it was Mike Reese who tracked him down, and he was angry as he's walking out of there. I know it could have made a difference. And, you know, this to me felt a little bit more sort of after the fact, but I thought you got an insight into what he was feeling on the sideline and, you know, what kind of teammate he was and all of that. With this particular cut right here, go ahead, Jimmy.
It was times when I was on the sideline, I just wanted to go up and, you know, say to Belichick or Matt Patricia and just say, this how we going to end this. I grew up in the Patriot system, you know, and I'm a well mannered guy, you know, I respect my authority, and I just couldn't ask them for something they didn't want to do. I just was doing my job. I was close to going up there and saying what I wanted to say to Matt or Belichick, but I just stayed in my lane and just did my job, man. I really wanted to go ask them, and but I didn't.
Do you believe that Butler, for the most part, respected the coaching?
From the outside, yes.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I have no idea how.
Well, no, nor do I. I'm just saying that it struck me with that comment that he said, look, you know, my job is to just do what they tell me. So ultimately, that's why I didn't go up there. And you know what?
I mean, I
believe him.
Yeah, I think for the most part he did. Wasn't there a game early on in the season where he retweeted some Pro Football Focus numbers?
Yes, after the Miami loss in Miami.
Where the Patriots, right, what they did in zone versus man or something like that, that sort of threw the game plan into question.
Right, good point.
So,
yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
I think there's some little subtle stuff. I don't think he had a good year. I think he backslid. I think a lot of the stuff that Mike Giardi tweeted about from his teammates has merit. Again, Mike Giardi tweeted this afternoon after this stuff came out on Sports Illustrated. Mike Giardi said, I texted a couple current Patriots about the Malcolm Butler media tour and his comments to SI. One player said, again, current Patriots said, we all wish it would have worked out better, but he should have been more focused on what mattered those 2 weeks. Another said, we didn't like the decision, but it wasn't without merit. Also, both said it's over and done with. Nothing getting said now changes a damn thing. Finally, on Butler, he tried, in quotes, to return to form, said one teammate, and we accepted that. But, Mike asked the player, was he ever himself? Quote, said the player, last year, no.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever himself really again. I mean, I agree with that part of it too. But I think he expressed it well there in terms of what a lot of people were feeling. Bill, really? This is how we're going to end it? This is how you're going to end it, with Malcolm Butler standing on the sideline for all but one play when he covered a punt. That's it? And meanwhile, you get Bartomosi and Richards running around out there? So that's what it comes down to. I guess what I'm saying is this. Even with the Giardi tweets, my opinion of the whole thing hasn't changed. I don't doubt that Butler probably was, you know, distracted much of the year. Maybe he was trying to make plays. He wanted to get paid. Peeking into the backfield, like Greg Bedard had said.
Or just bothered by the Stephon Gilmore money all season long.
All of the above, Mari.
Yeah. Lacked focus. He was probably, you know, slacking off in meetings, maybe not paying attention. But he obviously respected chain of command, because if he was that big of a pain in the ass, he would have went to Matt Patricia or Bill Belichick on the sideline of that game and said, like, what are you doing? Put me in. Put me in, coach. Come on. Like, I can help.
Still should have been on the field in the second half. No matter what it is, he still should have been on the field in the second half.
No question. To me, it goes back to that. But whatever it wasn't bad enough to take the uniform away, and you're losing the game, so you're not going to try and do everything you possibly can to affect the outcome? Inexcusable. Inexcusable. If it was so bad that he wasn't fit to play, then don't play him. Don't dress him. Send him home. You've done that. Teams have done that. Happens all the time, in fact. Covered that Super Bowl, that Raiders-Buccaneers Super Bowl in 2000. I think his name was Garrett Robbins. He went to Tijuana.
I remember Barrett Robbins.
Yeah, and so they sent him home. Like, no. You know, you're no. And so that you take the whole thing off the table. You know, if they had dressed him, but you're not starting because you're not focused, and they're letting up all these sacks, and they just sat the guy on the sidelines, you'd all look and say, well, why don't you see what the kid can bring you? Nothing's working. So you invite this whole thing by dressing the guy. And that was...
Well, a previous caller brought up Tyquan Underwood before that second Giants Super Bowl. They cut his ass the night before.
Right.
You know, if it was that big of a problem, you knew he wasn't going to be back with the team, send him home. Bye.
We continue with your calls here on Agenda Free Friday. Rick and Woburn on Johnny Manziel and the Patriots. Do you want him, Rick?
Hey, what's up? Ric Flair here.
Hey, Ric Flair.
What's up? Manziel. I want to talk about... You guys are talking about him leaving the club or whatever. Jim Murray, whatever. He actually came up with a good point.
I cut him off.
That guy's called before.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That's going to be a problem.
Okay.
I'm being proactive.
Yeah. If I remember right, the last call didn't end well either.
I don't remember it. Open line if you want to grab it. Here's Dave in Melrose on the bullpen yesterday. Hi, Dave.
Hey, what's happening? So Cora, seventh inning, right? Barnes goes out there, and I know Tony had touched on it. You know, you don't think he's your eighth inning guy, but I mean, he just threw a scoreless seventh. Why don't you roll into the eighth with him? I mean, they bring in another right-handed guy, wild thing. He's obviously been inconsistent his whole career. I don't know. See what you can get out of Barnes and then go from there.
So there's another second guess. And thanks for the call. I don't mean to cut you off, but just your thoughts on keeping Barnes.
Well, I think that this is part of the problem that comes with a first-year manager. And again, this part is not necessarily Cora's fault. He goes in, he makes his judgments, he comes up with a blueprint, and he goes into the game and he says, well, Barnes will get the seventh, Kelly in the eighth with Smith backing him up, and then we have Kimbrel in the ninth if we need it. Okay, fine. That's the plan. And so they go in, Barnes gives them the seventh, they hand the ball off. I mean, most managers don't keep a setup man in there for two innings. But to me, what bugged me about this is that once it started to get off the rails, he didn't react. It's like he sort of stuck to it. After saying, I'll put Kimbrel in, you know, Pointer makes the team, all of that. And then he stuck with Kelly too long. He had the lefty there that he didn't bring in to face a lefty. And I know he's a rookie, but then why have him up? And if you're going to say that you're bringing Kimbrel in the eighth, then, you know, you can't then say after the game, oh, yeah, but I didn't mean now. Like, I just felt he was all over the map after the game, too. And I think when it started to unravel, it caught him by surprise, too, as it did a lot of people.
Let's try another Manziel call. John and Nada. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering, with kind of the theory behind that they brought in Jimmy G to light a fire under Brady when they did, if the idea that if Belichick's really trying to stick it to Brady and knowing how much he seems to be enjoying the spotlight lately, that to bring in somebody like Johnny Manziel would be kind of Belichick's last way to kind of stick to Brady a little bit.
So, John, I can see why you'd say that, because they brought in Manziel with Garoppolo in 14. I just think the ship has sailed in terms of getting Brady with this. Because, again, Brady's now talking about his mortality himself. Brady's talking about, why do we do this? You got to make sure you have conviction and picking the kids up from hockey. Like, Brady now sees the finish line. So if you draft the next guy, it's not like you're motivating Brady to keep his job. He's already looking at the clock, it looks like. Like, overnight, he's already looking at the clock, which is annoying when you had the next guy here for 10 years. So I don't think drafting the next guy or bringing the next guy gets to him like it did in 2014. That ship has sailed. You want to get Brady's goat? You keep dinking around with this trainer, feels like to me.
I mean, to me, I bring in Manziel because I think he can. You might be able to get him to play.
But it's not going to motivate.
No. There's no connection to Brady.
I mean, don't you feel the days of motivating Brady like that are over?
Yeah. You can bring in Aaron Rodgers at this point, and I don't think it's going to motivate him. Because in 2014, there was a little bit of a decline, it's fair to say. And at that point, he hadn't won two more Super Bowls. And I think there was, at least I was one of the people questioning, could he actually win another one?
The only thing I wondered yesterday is that, you know, look, Brady's near the end. So either way, he's gone in a few years. Max, probably. Because it's Manziel and all the baggage that comes with Manziel, does Brady say, are you guys serious with this?
No, I don't even think he cares. Again, there's nothing left to prove at this point.
No, that's the only variable with Manziel I wonder about. But I don't think that's their impetus for doing it. I think their impetus for doing it is because they think they might be able to strike gold or strike oil. And then all of a sudden, and at the worst, you've got competition for the guy you draft. I mean, to me, I would do it if I'm them. I think it makes sense.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Have you had that collective meeting with Coach Belichick and Tom that you talked about?
Yes, we met, and I meet individually with each of them. But the thing that I don't know if it's completely understood, that Bill and Tom communicate and meet a lot.
Bill, Tom has 2 years left on his contract. Has there been any extension talks?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to talk about contracts and personal situations, so we'll just let that one go, along with all the other contract questions.
All right, plenty of Patriots drama still to work our way through. And the people in the know think it's still as bad as ever. That Belichick and Brady may have spoken, but nothing's been resolved, and they're all still in their corners.
I mean, it doesn't feel like things have been resolved. Again, because to me, you always got to judge it by the actions. Like, because they'll tell you whatever they want to tell you. Why hasn't Brady done his contract yet?
Big giveaway. As is the Gronkowski contract as well. Those are giveaways. Follow the money. All right, so that's on the table. Everything else is on the table. I just got to update you on the Chinese space station because we spent some time on this. And as you know, I have a thing about meteors and asteroids and projectiles, and it's now I've got my backup. So in a debate, like, I think asteroids are a real threat to humanity, and I don't think people appreciate that threat enough. Too many of you think we can just go up into the sky and laser it out of the way.
No, you don't like things falling out of the sky is what it comes down
to. Well, no, I think that people that think we could just shoot it with a laser are bent or you know, not even close. Like, you don't get it. We don't have the technology. We don't have close to the technology. So I'm not necessarily worried about this Chinese space station. What what it does tell me is that we are powerless against these things from space. That's all I'm telling you. And that's been my argument. And this just proves my argument. Because, again, this is a man-made object that was in near-Earth orbit. This is not coming from another galaxy. It's something we made, we put up there, and we have no blasted idea where or when this thing is falling. We've known it's coming down now for months. The original window was something like March 29th to April 15th. And then, you know, from here to there, like, it's spanning three quarters of the globe. And then it's they've quote-unquote narrowed the thing. And now it's supposed to come this weekend at some point. And I'm just, you know, there's a million reports out there, and they change every now and then. But this is just from space.com. I thought that might be a good source. The falling Chinese space station, Tiangong-1, is tumbling in orbit and may crash back to Earth as early as Easter Sunday, experts say. Estimates for the crash of the space station, sometime between March 31st and April 1st, with a focus of 10 a.m. Eastern on April 1st.
Easter Sunday.
According to the Aerospace Corporation.
10 a.m., huh?
Which is tracking the space lab's fall. 10 a.m. on Easter Sunday.
I need to make sure I'm in the house and in the basement at that time.
This is what I love. That April 1 target comes with an error of 16 hours.
Give or take.
Well, that's pretty good,
16
actually.
Hours?
That's actually not that bad.
You no, can't tell within 16 hours when the thing is already, it's upon us. It's on us.
I thought you were going to say 16 days,
it's
considering
coming.
The rest of the information surrounding
it. No, it's on us.
Thing.
Here it is. It's right there. You can see it. It's coming down. There it is. And you still can't tell within 16 hours?
Why can't we shoot a missile at it?
Right.
Because we can't. This is my point. We're clueless.
Well, see, I don't think that's true.
We're clueless.
I just think we're not worried about it.
We act like we have the answers. We act like we have it figured out. And if you buy it, I'm sorry. This is not some Bruce Willis movie.
Well, as the CFO of Lava Tarp Incorporated, how would you suggest we actually stop this thing? Get a bunch of tanks and shoot at it?
I think you want to hide?
Nope, you hide. You hit the basement. And don't buy the bullcrap of, you know, yeah, we'll just blow it out of the sky. Let's just be real. Be real. The end could come at any moment. Bang.
So duck and cover. That's how the old duck and cover.
From a rock from space.
Which was really just
carry an umbrella.
So the authorities could find all the dead bodies quicker.
That April 1 target says the story comes with an error of 16 hours. So the spacecraft could potentially begin its fiery death. Fiery death dive. Anytime between Saturday and Sunday afternoon. An analysis by the European Space Agency also supports that reentry estimate.
Hmm. So the Euros, our data is in line with the Euros?
But scientists and engineers still cannot pinpoint exactly where and when the 9.4 ton...
Yeah, but it's going to disintegrate as it's coming through.
Listen.
Good God.
They can't pinpoint exactly where and when the 9.4 ton space station will fall. Partly that is because the school bus size station is tumbling. Oh, why didn't you say so? I thought it was coming down like a football, a spherical football or a frisbee.
Spiral.
Oh, no. So God forbid that asteroid is tumbling, because if it's tumbling, we won't be able to know within 16 hours and 3,000 miles where that thing's going to hit. And you think Bruce Willis is going to go up to space and shoot the thing out of space? Please.
How much does it weigh? 9.5 tons?
9.5 tons.
And 19,000 pounds.
And tumbling? It's not coming in a... straight line.
No.
It's like space Tebow through.
It's the size of a school.
Imagine that, right? It's actually tumbling. There's some wobble to it. You can't get a straight frisbee line to the to Earth, and that has thrown them because it's tumbling, Murray. The window is now 16 hours.
So it's like a wild pitch, sort of, right? Is that what it
like
is?
Joe Kelly coming down from space.
Programmed by Joe Kelly. The Joe Kelly space station.
I love this.
I like it.
It's tumbling, Roger Thompson, a senior engineering specialist with Aerospace Corp, said.
Nerd.
We have been able to confirm that there is a tumble. Oh, great, Roger. You've confirmed the tumble. We just can't tell the orientation. So what good are you?
Well, if it's tumbling, I don't think it really matters, right? It's probably turning over and stuff.
Now, I've seen some reports that have narrowed the strike zone, but according to this story... It still says, because the original estimates were somewhere between 43 north and 43 south latitude.
Yeah, right.
This one says it's expected to fall to Earth somewhere between the latitudes of 42.7 north and 42.7 south. Oh, neat. So you came in 0.3 on either side. You understand, folks, just so you know.
Well, the closer it gets, the more we know.
Yeah, right. So the 43 north to 43 south is basically Buffalo to Cape Town, South Africa. Basically, most of the inhabited world. Basically. So now they've narrowed that a little bit. So now Buffalo, I guess, is safe.
I bet you it hits water.
But apparently we're in the strike zone. So that's another thing that's supposed to make us feel better.
But again, it's going to break into pieces as it comes through the atmosphere. We're not going to get...
So there's more... That's like bird shot. That's like now you're more likely to get hit.
More like bird poop. But we're not going to get hit by a school bus. You're not going to get hit by a school bus falling out of the sky.
No, you're going to get hit by one of the fat kids in back coming at you a million miles an hour. And it's got all these stories, but it's toxic. It's you can't touch the thing. Don't get anywhere near it. So Boston's in the strike zone, just FYI.
So is Jersey.
They think it's coming sometime this weekend, but they don't know. And it could easily be here as it could be Zimbabwe. Like, they have no clue. And it's right on top of you. You can see the thing. There was a sighting over Malaysia. They saw the thing.
I saw it.
Streak across the sky in Malaysia.
I saw that story. Yeah, I saw that story with the photo. I saw that. I vote for Connecticut as the strike target.
Oh, so this thing about...
Well, parts of Connecticut.
So hold on. This thing that's going to hit water is supposed to make me feel better. That's like... That is so asinine.
Why?
Because all that is a math thing. Is that we're mostly water. The Earth is mostly water. 70% water. But that means... Well, but so then there's a 30% chance it strikes land, and then there's a 10% chance that there's someone on that piece of land. Like, that doesn't make me feel any better. The whole crux of this, Maz, is us being able to control the thing from space. We can't. So I'm just playing a probability game.
Well, let me ask you a question. When you drive home tonight, can you control the fact that some jackass might slam into you from behind?
Mostly not.
Okay, so there you go. What's different about this?
That we're under the delusion that we can shoot these things out of the sky.
I'm under no delusion whatsoever.
Thank
I think
you.
The thing's going to hit the water.
Thank you. Well, that's it. So that's it. Just continuing that argument. But anyway, it's coming, folks. Here it comes. Yeah, I think this. I saw the translation. It was like floating palace or something. It's Chinese. The Tiangong means something. I think it means floating palace, something like this. But it's coming. It is coming this weekend.
Some floating palace where they get like dancers in
there? They have no idea where or when, but it's coming. Here's an update.
Felger, they get strippers.
90 seconds, no commercials. We're right back.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.